right from the get-go, it was an abnormal relationship with drinking. Right from the start, I started drinking to get drunk. That was the point to me. I remember filling a 2-liter bottle full of beer at a relative's house and taking it home. And that was the first time I really drank. I never really thought it was bad. It's just something that I did. And by the time I got to my senior year of high school, it really started getting worse. I would drink at school. I would go home during lunch from school and drink hard alcohol and then go back to school. And during all this, I was an honor roll student. So I didn't really have any suspicion. Parents didn't really catch me. Teachers didn't really catch me. And so that continued to go into my late teens. And it was just kind of a way for me to like isolate myself, like disassociate from people and just be by myself and drink. I always drank by myself because I didn't feel like I fit in with anybody. And then when it really spiraled out of control was when I turned 21. It had progressed and progressed, but now that I was 21, I didn't really have to hide it from anybody. It was legal to do, and I could buy my own stuff. I didn't have to find other people. So at that time, the frequency with which I drank increased, and the amount I drank increased. It eventually got to the point where almost every day I would drink, and it would, to the point of blacking out, where I wouldn't remember. And eventually, I got kicked out of home for my drinking habits. My parents would find me passed out, or I wouldn't remember the whole night before, and they would have to tell me what happened. And in that whole time, I started slipping into depression. I was already isolative, and so by that time, the depression started kicking in, and it kind of intertwined with my addiction. I just drank more, and the more I drank, the more depressed I was. It was like a downward spiral. And the one thing I thought that could make me happy was money and a good job. So I eventually got that job and made good money. But if anything, it made it worse because I had it and I was as unhappy as I've ever been. And at that point, I became suicidal. And looking back at it, my drinking actions and the amount of alcohol I drank was suicidal. There were times where I would wake up and would have blood on my face and not know anything that happened the night before. And there was times where I would wake up and just not remember anything. And eventually that led me to try to commit suicide. I stormed out of my house one day. I was drinking the whole weekend, all day long, and I stormed out of the house and drove my car as fast as I could. And when I woke up, the car was mangled around my body. I would later find out that I flipped the car multiple times off a mountain highway. And also I would later find out that I completely broke my neck into pieces. But at the time, when I woke up in the car, I didn't know that. I just woke up and was covered in blood. And that's when God intersected my life and performed a miracle in my life.
Welcome to Unhooked. My name is Pastor Bernie.
And I'm Dr. Kitty. And today on Unhooked, we're going to talk about underage drinking.
And we are excited to have Dr. Eugenia Mata Greenwood with us today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
What are some of the factors that prompt a young person to begin drinking?
Well, there are a lot of factors. Teenagers usually are very curious and they're experimenting with new things. I think one of the most important factors is just socialism. They see all the others doing it. There's a lot of peer pressure if you don't do it. There's also they're just regular boredom, or sometimes they just hear that it would be good to escape their reality, or they may even help them with anxiety issues or to help them gain self-confidence. Whatever the reason, usually it starts, and if they like it, then they will continue. And if they have other predisposing factors that will, you know, make them continue, then it can really turn into a big problem.
Uh-huh. So are there other drugs that perhaps after a teenager starts abusing alcohol, are there other drugs that they might start taking or getting into as a result of that?
There are a lot of other drugs. I mean, the number one drug that companies alcoholism or, you know, alcoholic intake is tobacco use. Mm. Other than tobacco use, there is other illegal drugs. For example, there's marijuana. There is the central nervous system stimulants. So these are drugs like cocaine and amphetamines, like meth, ecstasy. There's also hallucinogens. Well, marijuana is a hallucinogen, but there are others too. And there's a variety. There's so many, it's hard to really put them all together. So, and there are a lot of different variations. For example, cocaine can be given in many different forms. It could be intravenous. It could be sniffed through the nasal pathway. There are many ways of taking one single drug, and there are different purities that you're given. One of the very big problems that we think in medicine is that the fact that these drugs are illegal puts these teenagers at risk, because they are getting these drugs in mostly non-purified forms, and they don't even know the dosage that they're taking. Mm. So it is completely impossible to be able to control what you're taking. Yeah. And they won't be able to control it as they think they can. And many times they don't even understand when they're experiencing side effects, and it just goes out of control within seconds.
Well, similar to what we heard Corey talking about, you know, drinking, and then you know, other kinds of drugs like you're talking about, that it just opens you up to those experiences. What about we hear about alcohol use in the family, and you know, alcoholism running in the family, but what about in families where the young learn from their parents by drinking at special occasions, etc.? Can that also influence underage drinking?
Yes, I think it can greatly influence, especially if there is a history of alcoholism. I think for those families, they should be more careful with their children, and greatly encouraged not to have any taste of alcohol at any moment. Unfortunately, you teach by example, but a lot of these parents don't have it under control either. So it is definitely a very big problem. I would encourage all parents to just basically not allow their kids to try it at any moment.
Wow. Do you think the media plays a role in encouraging underage drinking? I mean, you can't help but notice the television commercials.
Yes.
And the fun that surrounds drinking and so forth.
There are a lot of studies about that, and definitely there is a very important component about the media encouraging teenagers. They put it as a way that is cool, that is socially acceptable, and actually you'll be weird if you don't try it, and things like that. And it's just really a pity that there is so much stimulation for these teenagers, and they have to go out there, and as parents, we need to help them stand against that and try to understand that they should not believe what they're seeing in the movies or in ads or in sitcoms and so on, and try to understand that they might not be able to control it, and that there is actually no need for them to try that in order to be a happy teenager. That's very important. That you have to encourage that they can live a very fulfilling life without any need of ever trying alcohol, tobacco, or any other drug.
It was interesting to see in Corey's story how he was a kid that actually was a little bit more isolated. He wasn't around big social circles and started drinking. He just sort of kept to himself and started drinking. Can you speak to that for just a
minute? Yes, and that's one of the problems in any facet with a teenager. If you have a shy teenager, it is going to be a lot harder to understand what is affecting your kid. And then if your kid is more sociable, and if you have a good relationship with your kid. So definitely, you as a parent, you should have a very close relationship, a relationship of trust. I would not encourage to be extremely strict and punishing type of parent, because you want that your teenager to always feel access towards you and to be able to come to you and feel that, in a way, I mean, yes, you are the authority, but you are also a very good friend that, wants and loves you, wants the best for you.
Yeah, I think you raise the important issue of communication, because Corey and many other young people said, they drank for a very long time, and their parents didn't know they drank, and they were able to hide that. So that relationship with parents and that, you know, hey, what are you doing? The accountability of where are you? I want to be invested in your life is very, very, sounds like important in underage drinking and where it might go from there.
Seems like it's really easy just to sort of get caught up in our own lives. And before we know it, you know, our kids sort of off doing their own thing, and they have their own life. And it could be that they're involved in something very negative and destructive to their health.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a break and be right back.
When I woke up in the car, my mind really was in a haze. I found out later that I had a severe concussion. I tried to start the car and tried to drive away, but then I kind of looked around and the roof of the car was in my face and I was in the back seat of the car. It pushed the whole driver's side all the way to the rear window. I got out of that car and I continued to walk down the highway. It was the middle of the night to try to find help. And now that I know what injuries I had, that's a miracle in itself, because my spinal cord should have been severed just by moving, and I was walking down a highway. And I eventually found help, and they took me to the hospital, and so I was in a full body brace for a month. But the road of that recovery from that surgery was really hard. The first week at home, I got an infection in my neck, and I eventually was in the hospital again for 2 more weeks. I had to be on IV antibiotics, and eventually my kidneys failed because I was allergic to the antibiotics. And during that whole time in the surgery and all the stuff I went through after, I remember being in the hospital with kidney failure, and I just remember that I wanted to die again. I just remember that life wasn't worth this, all this pain. But eventually my kidneys started coming back and I started feeling better. And part of my discharge from the hospital was to receive therapy and also to attend meetings for alcoholism. And therapy proved to be one of the biggest keys in my recovery. I started going right away, and I go every week, and I still continue to go. At first, it was dealing with the depression, and slowly but surely, the depression started to fade, and the way I thought about situations started to fade, and I started becoming a happier person. And I eventually worked the 12 steps through a group, and that proved to help me with finding different ways to cope really with life, because my main thing with life was if anything happened, I would drink. And it's pretty much finding why you drink and finding different ways to deal with stress and things like that. At first, after my surgery, I would have dreams where I was drinking. Like I would wake up and I would like feel like I was dirty because I was drinking in my dreams. But I'm like 20 months sober now, so a lot of the cravings have gone, but I still don't feel comfortable around alcohol. Like not really that I want to do it, but just kind of that, like, that's what I was. Cause now I'm like the opposite now, where I don't drink and I don't do anything bad. I don't smoke anymore. But so now when I see that, I was like kind of not ashamed, but just don't want to be that person anymore.
Welcome back to Unhooked. Dr. Monta Greenwood, what are some of the telltale signs that maybe your teenager is drinking, an underage drinker?
Well, one of the most obvious would be the smell that you can get. I would recommend to any parent, if they are seeing any abnormal behavior or a drop in their school performance, or they just don't know what their friend's circles of his kid is. Any of these things, if they're starting to have some doubts, they can just wait for their kid to come back late at night. I would stay late, and I would just greet my kid and get close to him or her, and then you can easily smell, usually, if there is alcohol in the breath of your kid. There are other symptoms, but sometimes the other symptoms, behavioral-wise, might be confused. I mean, you can have a kid that is having also problems in other areas and other diseases that don't have to do with alcohol use. Hmm. So the most relevant would be probably the smell. And actually, if you can find out directly from your kid, that would be obviously the best to talk.
You know, we have laws about selling alcohol to children that are underage, etc. So where are young people attaining alcohol?
Well, they go to parties where there are younger adults. Usually the alcohol use is heavier between 15 years and 25 years of age. Yeah. So they hang around with other of these younger adults, usually college students. And these are the ones that have these frat parties and so on, and they have binge drinking, really heavy drinking. And they get close, and there is nobody asking for ID in these places, and they dress appropriately, and they can pass for college students, and that's how they get a hold of a lot of the time. Sometimes they just get it at home without the parents knowing, which is, I think a parent should be able to know how much alcohol they have and to be able to see if it's the level of alcohol is decreasing in their cabinet, but sometimes they don't notice.
What's the physical toll that it takes on an underage drinker? What's happening to their body physically?
Well, there are acute and chronic effects of alcohol use. So the acute effects is what most people know about, which is if you get drunk, then you vomit, you can become dehydrated, you're very drowsy. If you get what we call alcohol toxicity or alcohol poisoning, it could really be dangerous. It could even cause coma and death. And it's something to really be aware of. A lot of these kids don't realize in these parties where they go binge drinking that they could have alcohol poisoning. And if not treated, they could die that very same night. Obviously, there is the judgment impairment, which is also an acute effect that will go away with several hours after you drink. However, a lot of these kids, they drink and they drive home, or they let themselves be driven by another friend that is also, you know, has also drank. And the number one killer of teenagers is actually car accidents, as you probably know. That's a very important, dangerous effect of alcohol. There is chronic effects, and the chronic effects can be irreversible. And so they're also very dangerous. And this will be what happens for alcoholics who are dependent.
Mm-hmm. You know, you remind me of some of the research I was involved in looking at high-risk behaviors in youth, and in some of the different international communities we looked at, it was interesting that they noted that the liquor stores were within a block or two of the high schools. And just the, you know, the prevalence of, you know, how the accessibility, just like you were talking about, might be there and so forth. And also from the home situation, lots of situations where young people said, I got most of that at home. And some said that their parents wanted them to do it at home so they would know that it was okay. So I'm wondering what you see with that.
Yes, and that is definitely not okay. I would not encourage any parent to give their kid to try. A lot of the times the kid will not like it, but you cannot risk them liking it in any way. There's been lots of studies showing that a person that does not drink until after the legal age, which is 21, has a much lower chance of becoming an alcoholic, about a 4-to-1 chance compared to somebody starting to drink a lot earlier. So it makes a big difference to allow your child to try it or not.
Yeah. What are the treatment options if you've got a teenager that's
right,
addicted to alcohol?
If you find that your teenager is actually has drunk or likes to drink, first of all, don't panic. Second of all, talk to your teenager and tell them why you think that this is a serious situation and that they want the best for them, and this is not definitely best for them. One of the things that you should definitely do would be to go and get a good healthcare provider to guide you through the process of stopping to drink. If obviously, if you can talk it, the problem is a lot of these teenagers think that they have it under control. But either way, you should convince your teenager to go and talk to an expert in the area. and they will be able to assess the situation better and give them a good guideline on how they're going to help that teenager stop altogether. So that is very important. And of course, always give a good example yourself about control and well, if you drink, then hopefully it will be only one drink for us, you know, to celebrate an occasion, and never drink and drive to give the a good example to your kid.
Thank you very much for being with us today, and Unhooked will be right back.
I never thought I was addicted. Like, looking back on it, I definitely was. Like, drinking when I was 15 and, like, going to school drunk all the time was definitely not normal. But to me, I thought I can control it. I'd be like, oh, I wouldn't have a problem. I'm not the kind of person that would be addicted to something. And so even when I would drink every day, I'd just be like, oh, just because it's what I do. It wasn't really until I went through everything I went through where I was like, I really do have a problem and I need to fix it. My parents went to a church. And so they really took me when I was in the brace. So I couldn't really move. I wasn't forced to go, but I just kind of went and just sat there by myself and didn't really talk to anybody because I had like a distrust of Christians. But eventually I started feeling accepted. And I got to the point where I was going week after week. And I saw it in my head that I could either go two ways. I could either stay the person I used to be or I could go down a new path. And so I decided to go down the path of God and not become the old person I used to be. All I can describe it as was like an instant weight off my shoulders. And through life, I developed like walls around my heart and I was really empty inside. And I just felt really alive for the first time. It's just an overwhelming feeling of happiness and joy that wasn't based on money or anything else. It was just based on God in my life. Since I was back to church and I started walking with God, My isolation is really non-existent. Now I'm like to the point where I'm so busy I don't know if I could do anything more. And people always tell me like they see happiness in my eyes and that people want to be around me. And I never really experienced that in my life. So it's like completely opposite of the person I was. I used to never want to be around people, but now I want to be around people and just enjoy other people. It really was God. Like, because I went through the therapy and that helped and everything. But it was really just how not to drink, how to not be depressed, but not really changing how the way you think or the way you love. But it was really working with God and working through that stuff that really changed me, who I was on the inside. My name is Corey, and I'm Unhooked.
Corey shared with us his painful story of beginning to drink as a young person, getting addicted from a very early age, and how his life was one of depression and feeling suicidal and almost taking his own life. My name is Dr. David, and I can tell you that as a college professor, there are many students in our high schools, in our elementary schools, and on our college campuses who struggle just as Corey did. Many of them come from families who have been addicted to begin with. Many of them struggle with what it's like to grow up in this world that is filled with hurt and with pain. They don't know what to do with all of that, and some of them conclude that using alcohol or drugs is an easy way out. But many of them also use alcohol and drugs as ways of dealing with the kind of hurt and pain that they've experienced as children. And so they get into feeling despondent, despairing, and hopeless. Many of them decide, in order to cope with this, I have to do something. And so many of them either learn to cope by fighting or by running. Those people who are strong in character, you know, who have learned that in order to survive in their families, they have to fight, end up doing that, and they often are angry, and they often are people who keep people away. They say, stay away from me, and their anger is a way of keeping people away. On the other side, there are people who don't like to face problems. They're more the people who tend to be more victims in the way they approach life. They would rather avoid pain or avoid problems. And so rather than confronting, they tend to run. They tend to be non-confrontational. They will give in to a problem rather than fight the problem. So no matter what your coping mechanism is, whether it's to fight or whether it's to flee from pain, God has a solution for you. And the solution is you find stability in the person of Jesus Christ. He is your rock and your fortress and your deliverer. He is the one who will fight your battle for you. You don't need to run from Him. And so for more information about how you can break away from habits that hurt, contact Adventist Recovery Ministries. And for prayer, call 1-888-446-7388. Choose to become unhooked today.